We are learning the 28th chapter. Good morning, everyone. And Shmuel Aleph, we're up to Pasuk Yud Aleph. This is a very fascinating second half of this parak, where we're on page 180 on parak Chaf Ches in our packet. The parak began, which we saw beginning of it last week, how Shaul, because he really had nowhere else to turn, he turns to a witch, and a male witch was
a warlock.
That's right. We had this opportunity for Shaul to try to find out some very valuable information. The information of what to do about the Plishtim army that are rapidly approaching. They're going to wage war against us. Maybe David is even joining them. Who knows? That's what it sounded like. We'll have to see. And Shmuel's not around anymore. Shmuel had passed away. And he therefore no longer had the Navi to turn to. But he still wanted to be able to ask Shmuel. So how can you possibly ask Shmuel if he's no longer alive? Well, there's an idea called Oven Yedoni, which is actually, we discussed a little bit, which is also in the English on page 180, of different ways in which sorcerers are able to revive the dead, which actually, through being able to do certain things with bones, depending on whether it's over Yedoni, where the bone is placed, in the mouth, under one's arm, somehow is able to cause the spirits to rise. And we're going to discuss today whether or not that's hocus pocus, so there's really a truth to it, was it a hoax? There's different mafarshim that deal with it. The problem was the supply. There was very limited supply of such people. Was it because it was such a difficult thing to master? No, the problem was that the king got rid of them all. He was very much against this, something which is against Torah, doesn't allow it, and it was very hard to come about. But nonetheless, he was able to find this one woman, even though the Pesukim don't necessarily say who it was. Some say it was the mother of Avner. And here he is in front of her. And we saw, concluding Pasuk Yud, Pasuk Tes and Pasuk Yud, that she was afraid, after all, even though she didn't know who this man was, he, Shaul, did not reveal his identity to her. He dressed himself in a disguise so that he should not let anyone know who he really was. But to her, she was afraid of the king. And what's the king going to say if he finds out that she's practicing this type of craft, this witchcraft? And therefore, Pasuk Yud said that he swore that nothing would happen to you. Nothing would happen to you. You'll be completely safe. No one is going to harm you. No one is going to turn you in to the king. And therefore, once her guard was down, she decides to do this witchcraft, this sorcery. V'tomer Isha. That's what the pasuk is. V'tomer Isha. So the woman said, V'tomer Isha says, Mi ale loch. Who exactly do you want me to lift up, to raise from the dead? V'yomer. And this man, who happened to be Shaul, but she didn't know that, he said, "As Shmuel Ha'alili, please bring up Shmuel." And Shmuel's name didn't have to describe who it was. Whenever you heard Shmuel, everyone knew who that was. And it was clearly, it was Shmuel Hanavi. And that's the person that this man, Shaul, wanted to ask the question about the Plishtim. And she did exactly that. After all, maybe he was a paying customer, and she wasn't going to get into trouble for it. And we also mentioned that Avner, her son, was actually one of the two people that accompanied him. And therefore, she decided to go about this craft. Plus a good bet. But Tera Isha as Shmuel. So the woman saw Shmuel, which is no big deal, because that's what she's supposed to do. However, but Tizak Bekol Gadol, she screamed a very loud scream. She was terrified at the sight that she saw. Okay, we'll have to explain what that means. But let's finish this pasuk first, on page 182. Vatomra Isha El Sha'ol, so the woman, immediately after screaming her lungs out, turned to this man, Lamor, to say, Lama Rimisani V'Ata Sha'ol. Why did you trick me? Why did you deceive me? I know who you are. You have to be Sha'ol. So the two questions that immediately should take place when you hear this is, how did she know it was Sha'ol? He didn't reveal who it was, and it doesn't sound like Shmuel said anything. All she did was see Shmuel. And the second question is, why did she scream? After all, if this was her profession, she'd be kind of used to doing this and to seeing this, right? So why did she scream? You can't say it's like she saw a ghost, quite literally. It doesn't matter. That's what she always did. So what exactly was bothering her? What was unusual about the sight that she saw that caused her to scream? So if we look in Rashi, there's a couple explanations. Let's start off on going back to page 180. This pasuk, there's a lot to discuss. And Rashi on the very bottom of page 180 gives us an insight to these two questions that we had. Batizak b'kol gadol, why did she scream out with a loud voice? Says Rashi, Shirasu oyla shlo kederach oyla, because she is used to seeing this process of people coming up, but it happened in this particular situation in an unusual fashion, something which she was not used to. Why? Because generally speaking, Shemala b'schoro olim raglehem l'mala, v'zeh olo rosh l'mala. Normally, what ends up happening, if you would ever ask a typical person, see the Rashi in bottom 180?
Oh, I'm
180, page 180. Yeah, bottom page 180. The last, second to last line. That typically speaking, when a person is revived, a typical person, an average Joe, what happens is, Olim Raglehem Lamala. You see them, their feet come up first. It's almost like they're standing on their heads. We'll have to discuss what that means in a moment. But that's what normally happened, and that's what she was used to seeing. She was waiting to see Shmuel's shoes come up and his feet emerge first. However, in this case, v'zeh olo rosh l'mala, for some reason, Shmuel came up standing in the normal fashion with his head up and his feet on the floor. And therefore, that scared her, because it was unusual. She saw this and she was shocked. She couldn't believe this. And Rashi concludes, Bishvil kvodo shel sha'ol. The only reason why this happened was, it must be because the only time this ever occurs is if a king would make such a request. The king would make the request to revive someone, then the person who is removed or lifted from the dead, that person comes up in the honor of the king head first, for whatever reason. And therefore, Rashi explains, that's how she knew this nobody was not a nobody. It was really Sha'ol. It was somebody. It must have been the king. And if he said, why could you have done this? You tricked me. That's how Rashi expresses it.
So this had happened before?
She did this all the time. This is her job. Apparently, she was aware that if there would be a king present,
so it might have never happened. She just knew that.
It could be it never happened, or it could be she was just surprised because she didn't. There was no king here. She wasn't expecting it.
Would it make sense?
Yeah.
That a common person, a simple person with eyes to see, as Shmuel, I can understand being asked to see Shmuel, but as Shmuel, a common person would come and ask for Shmuel.
It's questionable of whether it'll be correct. Oh, of course.
I mean, just because she would understand.
Yeah.
Just because it is Shmuel and Aviv who is appearing, then this is not a common name.
Well, I mean, she was already told that the person she was supposed to bring up was Shmuel. That she knew already. That's what Pasuk Gadal said.
Is she just Shmuel and Aviv, or does he ask her for Shmuel?
I don't know. Shmuel Ha'olili. I don't know.
You, there's only one Shmuel, like Cher or Oprah. Or just one Shmuel.
Well, I mean, there really is only one Shmuel. When a person says Shmuel, it means that one. I mean, there are many. Probably it was. She knew. I mean, I guess what you're saying, maybe when you just a name, and then there could be a thousand, and then the one which is most appropriate to this person comes up. It could be. That could be.
I would think if she was a seer, she knew. She saw that he was shown.
Well, apparently, right? She wasn't able to see the people right in front of her face for some reason. The Radak helps us out even more with this Rashi. Now, it's not underlined over here, but if we look on page 182, it gives us a more of a practical reason as to why she was screaming, what was bothering her. And again, it's not underlined, but nonetheless, the Radak on page 182, which is about, let's say, the eighth line from the top, the second word on the line is v'lefichach, and therefore, 182, about eight lines from the top, the Radak, the second word is v'lefichach. And therefore, it says like this, Za'aka, why did she scream? And this is more, I like this Radak because it's a little bit more down to earth. She screamed, Ki yara shiva linsosa l'haragosa. Because she was concerned, now that she realized that it was in fact Shaul, that it was in fact the king, she was concerned that he was trying to catch her red-handed and tricking her to see, because Shaul was very particular. There was no one allowed to do this form of witchcraft in his land, and anyone that would be severely punished. So now, once she figured out, because of this unusual way in which Shmuel came up, that it must be Shaul's here, she screamed. Not that she screamed because she saw the feet this way and this, but she screamed for her life. She was concerned that she was going to be killed because Shaul purposely went undercover, like an undercover detective, to try to catch those people who were still doing this. L'fikach omrla, that's the reason why we'll see in Pasuk Yud Gimel eventually, but it says here in the Radak that she said that Shaul responded, Al tiri, do not be afraid. What do you mean, don't be afraid? She's afraid. Why are you telling me not to be afraid? Kolomer, Mimasha Adyira Al Tiri Kilo Amitcha Kikvar Nishbatiloch Abulmar. Okay. So you said, what do you mean not to be afraid? I'm scared. I saw a ghost. I'm petrified. She says, don't be afraid of me, because even though I am Shaul, and generally I would punish people, explains the Radak, and that's the reason why you screamed, you should not be afraid. Because in this particular situation, I'm not going to harm you. So that makes sense that the reason why she screamed was not because she saw something unusual, because she saw this all the time, supposedly. So if she saw it all the time, why is she so scared? She's scared because she realizes, oh, this is Shaul in front of me, and now I'm going to be sentenced to death for committing this crime. He tricked me, and therefore his response was, as we'll see again in Pasuk Gimel in a few moments, Al Tiri, do not be concerned. Do not be afraid. I have a different explanation as to the significance of why she screamed. And if we look on page 183, it discusses on the left bottom at length different opinions as to why exactly the significance of Oven Yedoni. Does it work? Is it real? Is it not real? So it brings down here three opinions. Which is a very lengthy Radak, which you're not going to get into, but I underline the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam, as well as others, say that this whole idea of Oven Yedoni, and I underline the word, it's a hoax. It's nothing. It was just a way to trick people into believing and deceiving, but it really has absolutely no belief. So a person who was desperate, and you call up 1-900 psychic for $8 a minute, but you want to hear something because you're sabrach and you're depressed. So they hear you, they ask you a couple questions, all of a sudden they can tell you all these great things. You're never going to call up a psychic hotline. They're going to say, oh, you know what? You're going to lose your job. You're going to be bankrupt. You'll never find love. They'll never say that because they want to build you up. And therefore, they are listening to your issues, and they'll respond accordingly. And that's how the Rambam explains this whole idea of Oven Yedoni. They weren't doing anything. They were just sensitive to the needs of the person in front of them, and they gave the impression as though they were actually accomplishing something, speaking to the dead, when in fact that's not the case. Now, again, there's other opinions that say that this may not be so true. It is possible, such as Rav Hai Gon as well as Rav Sadia Gon. He says that even though they have no power, however, in this particular situation, Hashem raised Shmuel's spirit in order to convey his message to Shaul, which we'll discuss. And then the Radak, in the third opinion, has a different one. So therefore, the way I like to read this is borrowing the first two, these two ideas, is really the second, is that she knew that what she did meant nothing. It was nothing. It was insignificant. It was a joke, right? She was a scam artist, basically. And therefore, whenever she would quote-unquote raise the dead, so the person was really impressed and used to give her a lot of money for doing it, but she knew it was a lie. It wasn't true. It was a joke. However, this is the one time that it worked. Why did it work? Because God caused it to work. So this is the one time. And therefore, she screamed out of complete fear. And if I may, this reminds me of Whoopi Goldberg. If you ever saw the movie Ghost, with Whoopi Goldberg, who was a scam artist, supposedly a psychic, and then this guy by the name of Patrick Swayze, whatever his real name was in the movie, all of a sudden she was able to hear him for the first time, and she was freaking out. She was going crazy, screaming. And of course, everyone was like, "What do you mean? You're always doing this." Because she never was. And all of a sudden, for the first time, she's hearing it. And therefore, that caused her to do as she did. So it's the exact same. That this was the first time. And therefore, based on these opinions, Rav Hai Gon, Rav Sadia Gon, that's why she screamed. Because it was the very first time that she actually saw and was witness to this actual act without being a complete hoax. Now, before we move on to the next pasuk, some explain, as we did about a year or so ago, the idea of what is this, that they come up backwards or forwards, what's the significance of this? So there's an interesting Gemara, which we spoke about in Parshas Bahaloscha, with the inverted nuns, that there's a story in Gemara Baba Basra about a child that unfortunately, related in the Talmud, was ill and then passed away. But somehow, miraculously, was revived. And the father turned to the child and said, "Not how are you?" The first question you want to know is, what did you see? What did you see in the afterlife? Because you got a glimpse of it for those few moments. And he said, "Father, I don't understand. It's very strange. Those who are Elyonim or Tachtonim, Tachtonim Elyonim, those who are in the top in this world, those who show off and are powerful in this world, in that another world, they're on the bottom. Those who are on the bottom seem humble people, simple people, but good people, but they're not overly impressive. Those people are all the way in the top." So he said, "Olam hafuch. I saw a complete inverted world. Everything's backwards." And the father said, "No, you have it all wrong. You saw the clear world. This world is the world that's backwards. That world is where everything makes sense. This world is where everything's backwards. I didn't see this anywhere, but I wonder if that's the significance of why the feet come up first. That they themselves, by having to come back to this world, which is an Olam Hafuch, they have to come that way. However, when it comes to someone like Shmuel, who's a tzaddik, who is able to utilize this world and ignore all the issues of this world, he was able to stand straight because he was straight and perfect in this world."
In this world and in the other world.
Exactly. So that's nice. The way. Thanks. That's
very
how.
Nice.
Thank you. So that's how I understand this this Rashi. Okay, let's move on to the next pasuk. The pasuk Yud Gimel. All right. It's probably more to talk about, but we should probably move on. V'yomala Hamelach. So the king said to her, screaming, shaking, "Al tiri. Don't be concerned. Don't be afraid." And again, the way the Radak usually, "Don't tell me how to feel. How can you tell me how to feel?" It means, "Don't be afraid. I will not kill you." Kima Ra'is. What did you see? What happened? What did you see? The Tomar Isha El Shaul. So now that she realizes that Shaul is not going to kill him, but he really genuinely is interested in knowing what happened, said, Elohim Reisi, I saw, Elohim sounds like a god, but we're going to translate it differently, a great person, as we'll see, Olim Min Aretz, came up from the ground. Olim, which interestingly is Lashon Rabim. So let's look in Rashi, in the top, page 182. Elohim Reisi Olim Min Aretz doesn't mean that they saw God, because God does not take upon himself a physical form. Elohim means someone who is God-like. Malachim Shnayim. I saw two angels, angel-like figures, Moshe Ushmuel. Now the question is, Shmuel makes sense, but it was a two-for-one deal. He only asked for Shmuel to come up. All of a sudden, Moshe is tagging along for the trip. It's obvious, we're going to see, it's not something which those who have since passed are interested in. They do not want to be aroused from where they are. So why would Moshe come? It's a frightening Rashi, as we're going to see. Listen to this Rashi. It says, Yara Shmuel. Shmuel was afraid. He himself had his own concerns. What was he afraid of? Shema ani misbakish v'din. Maybe the reason why I'm coming back to this world is that someone has a tine on me. I did something wrong, and I'm going to be standing b'din. I'm going to be standing in judgment. V'hela Moshe imo. And therefore Moshe is going to be, what, a lawyer? Okay, we'll be able to speak up on my behalf. And the Yalkut over here, which is not in our packet, says something which is quite powerful. Now, Shmuel, who's a Navi, a Tzaddik, Rebbe Elezer, whenever he would read the sentence that we just read, which he understood that it wasn't just Shmuel, it was also Moshe, and why Shmuel felt obligated to bring Moshe along to be the lawyer to protect him. It says, Kimati lahaikra, when he reached that pasuk, he would cry. Why would the great Rebbe Elazar, when he would study this section of Sefer Shmuel, why would he cry? He says like this, I'm just going to read these two lines. It says, "She's orim remidas pachad hadin," because it awoken within himself the fear that one should have when it comes to Yom Hadin. It's appropriate to be learning about this, especially so close to Rosh Hashanah. Shenafla Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel, the great Shmuel Hanavi, was concerned that maybe he would be judged disfavorably when it came to din. Bim huchshash. And this is what he's afraid. How much more should we have to worry about when it comes to our Yom Hadin, our Day of Judgment? And Shmuel was, again, where no one in this world will ever come anywhere close to Shmuel. Yet he needed Moshe to stand by his side. So ourselves, how much more should we focus on this? And the Kli Yakar, which again, it's not on our packet, but it's also worthwhile saying. And he writes with regard to this: the Gam Isha Shitsaka b'kol gadol l'sha'ol. Also, with regard to this woman, that when she screamed out, when she cried out, Hacharada shala, her fear, her screaming, Gam hoisam in a kal v'chomer hazeh. What was she scared of? She saw this all the time, assuming, according to his opinion, she did this all the time, and it was real. So why was she screaming? She was screaming because she only was supposed to see Shmuel. She saw Moshe also. And in her mind, she said, why did Moshe come? It must be because Shmuel is petrified of Yom Hadin. And therefore, she screamed within herself because, explains the Kli Yakar, she realized how much she also needs to be concerned of with regard to her own actions. That with regard to Shmuel himself, this is what he's concerned of, Yom HaDin. So much more, this woman should be concerned of her Yom HaDin. And therefore the Kli Yakar says, that's the reason why she screamed. That's the reason why she cried in terror.
How did she know it was Moshe? She's a seer.
Moshe, I don't know. We're going to see Shmuel. That's the only... Right. I mean, we're going to see Shmuel is going to be... and a specific way it'll be clear, because he always dressed in a certain way, which we're going to see in the Pesukim. So everyone knew the way Shmuel dressed.
But really, think about this with your mother. Don't we also ask for an advocate, somebody to advocate for under my dad's
discussion?
What's the
word?
Sanegor.
Oh. Right.
Sanegor is the prosecutor.
Right. Yeah. So this is the idea. I mean, if Shmuel himself needed it, so Alachas Kamakam, all the more so ourselves. Now again, we the Radak over here, which I believe is also not underlined, Masudas David says it similarly, but let's look at the Radak in Pasuk Yud Gimel. As we said before, Elohim doesn't mean God, but it means someone who's gadol, a great person, a leader, right? As we find also in Shmuel, Ukumo Elohim lo tekalel, right, with regard to cannot curse a judge. And then we jump one line after that in the Radak, which is the first wide line, quoting the words of the Medrash Tanchuma. He says as follows: Nafsho shel Moshe he'el imo, that Moshe, the nefesh, the neshama of Moshe came up, v'vakesh rachamim al Yisrael. It wasn't necessarily to protect Shmuel, but it was for rachamim for the Jewish people. V'fikach amar olim. That's why it says olim. They both went up. Olim is the lashon of rabim. And therefore it showed, that's how we saw that it wasn't just Shmuel, it was also Moshe. But the Radak gives, again, a different twist on the matter, because this is a time in which the Jewish people are going to be judged. Why are they being judged? Because the Plishtim's army is, they're inches away, they're a moment away from killing the Jewish people. And at that time, when a person's life is hanging in the balance, that's the time in which a person needs rachmin, needs that compassion. So some explain that's the reason why Moshe came at that time, not for Shmuel's sake, but for the sake of Klai Yisrael, for the Jewish nation. Let's move on to Pasuk Gedal. Pasuk Gedal says as follows: "V'yomer la ma taru." And so again, this is what we have: Moshe here, we have Shmuel. Pasuk Gedal, he asked her the question: "Ma taru? What exactly does he look like? What's his appearance?" Basically, he's questioning her. He's saying, come on, is this really true? Maybe this whole screaming business is just one big act. V'tomer, and she said, I'll tell you what he looks like. I may never have seen Shmuel before, but maybe this description will be a spinning image. Ish Zokin, there's an elderly man, Ola, who went up. V'ote me'il, and he was wearing some type of a garment, a cloak, which we're going to see was the very special cloak we saw that his mother Chana made for him when he used to do the service in the days with Eli, the Kohen Gadol. So he used to always wear this special cloak that his mother made for him.
Was that mentioned previously?
Yes. Way back. Yeah. She made this special cloak for him that he wore. And so he always wore it, which is interesting that he always wore this garment. Therefore, everyone recognizes him with this garment. Beeda Shaul, because of that, he now realized Kishmuel, who this must have been him. But Yikud Apayim Artem Yishtachlu, and therefore, out of the showing respect and reverence, he bowed down in that place. And Rashi says, which is basically what we said already, but Rashi in Pasuk Yudal, it says, because we know he used to very often wear this special garment, which is also what the Radak says over here, that this was what he was always accustomed to wear. It's an interesting Gemara, in the Sechet Sanhedrin, which is what's being studied on Shabbos, the last chapter thereof, called Chelek, talks about, among other things, talks about Mashiach, also talks about a lot of the ideas of Tchias Mason. And it says that when it comes to the resurrection of the dead, which is one of the 13 principles of our faith, the Rambam is difficult to understand, but nonetheless it is something which we're obligated to believe in, philosophically speaking, is that when Tchias Mason comes, a person will come up the same way that they went down, which means they'll be wearing the same attire, the same garments, the same clothes. True, that's true.
The clothes would be when you died, or?
Yeah.
Oh,
Oh, the top of them?
That's, yeah, apparently, yeah. But it could also mean...
Then does that mean Shmuel was not buried in his Tachikvah?
It's a good question, because over here, it doesn't necessarily mean that he was he wasn't physically, his body was not necessarily...
This is a
spiritual vision. But the idea that, the reason why they say this occurs is, and it also is the same thing, even though Hashem will, during Tchias Maasim, heal those who have physical ailments, physical illnesses or whatnot, Hashem will not do it until after they're resurrected. They will come back if they had a limp or whatever. They will come back that way. And the Mefarshim explain so that anyone who denies Tchias Maasim, if they would look at this person and say, look, this person is Tchias Maasim, they'll say, yeah, it's a different person. It's not the same guy. So the fact that, he says, what do you mean? Remember him, he had this limp, he wore this, he did this. So therefore it would be a proof that 100% Tchias Maasim can't deny it. Similarly, that's the idea over here, that he was wearing this cloak. And we see because he wore this garment, this was the only way that it was 100% discernible, recognizable, that in fact it was Shmuel. And the correct thing that he did was he bowed down to show signs of respect and awe for the great Nabi, for Shmuel. Pasuk Tesvav.
Who bowed down?
Shaul.
Can I just say this in English?
Yeah.
Where it says, why is the power of the necromancer? The Rambam thinks this whole thing was a hoax.
Right. That's what we read before.
Yeah. It certainly is up to interpretation. Right. So, it brings down these three different opinions. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. But the Torah either way says it's not allowed. You're not allowed to be involved in Ovni Adoni. The Torah specifically says that. But the question is, someone who does it, is it really doing anything? Or is it just a game? Is it a trick? Is it a hoax? Or maybe it is real? And again, according to the opinion which I like, which is the second of Rav Hai and Rav Sadigon, is that it really means nothing. But in this one case, it worked because Shmuel needed to convey a message to the king, as we're going to see right now. Yemer Shmuel el Shaul. So Shmuel says to Shaul, the first words that Shmuel says is, as we mentioned before, not happy that he was revived. He says, Lama Hirgastani Lahalos Osi. This word, Hirgastani, the Mesudas Sion, is Inyan Tinuas Hachoradim Amakam Amnucha. Why was it that you removed me from this place of my eternal rest to elevate me and to lift me up to over here? Why would you disturb me from my makum hamenucha, my place of eternal rest? How could you do such a thing? You're not supposed to do this. V'yamar Shaul, and Shaul said, you're right, I shouldn't have done it, but sar li ma'od, I'm in tremendous pain, I'm in tremendous anguish. Why? Plishtim nilchamim bi. The Plishtim, they're right around the corner. They're about to wage war against the whole Jewish army. And you're probably wondering, so why did I turn to you? Why didn't I seek other means? Velukim sarmiolai. Hashem turned away from me. He did not give me any answers to what I should do about this situation, this predicament. V'lonani od gam biad hanavim, gam b'chalomos. No one answered me, not the prophets, not through dreams and its interpretations. Therefore, v'ekulacha, I had no choice but to call upon you, l'hodieni ma'ese, so that now I'll be able to know what to do. And the Rashi over here tells us something quite amazing. Because, if we recall, it's a little bit different. The people that he explains to Shmuel, that he inquired first, he mentions everything except for one, namely the Urim Batumin. In Pasuk Yud, which we saw last week, he tried everything. He hoped that there would be interpretation of dreams. He hoped that whatever prophets remained, they would be able to help him out. And Hashem also didn't do anything. He even went to the Urim Batumin. In fact, remember, even though the Urim Batumin, according to some opinions, were by David, he actually sent a messenger all the way into the Philistine camp to be able to see if the Urim Batumin could help him, tell him anything, and they didn't. strange, why didn't Shaul convey to Shmuel that he also seeked the Urim V'Tumim to find out whether or not he could be answered by them? But the pasuk doesn't mention that, right? It does not mention the Urim V'Tumim. It mentions everything else except for it. And Rashi picks up on this, and this is a very, very important idea of tshuva, which is so appropriate to read this Rashi and the Mefarshim thereafter about the significance of why he did not mention the Urim V'Tumim. Let's see Rashi. Rashi in Pasuk Tesvav. Gam biad hanavim gad v'chalomos. Now, if you don't like this Rashi, you can turn to the Radak, you can turn to the Mesudas David. Everyone picks up on this. It's actually a Gemara. He says like this. Although the Urim V'Tumim l'omrlo, Shaul the king did not mention to Shmuel that he asked the Urim V'Tumim and he received no answer. Why is that not mentioned in our pasuk in verse 15, pasuk Tesvav? The Alpha Pisha Shaul behem, we know he did ask them, Kamo Shomer Lamal, as it said in previously in pasuk Yud. Why didn't he mention it? Says Rashi, Shehoya Boshmi Menu al Shehorig Nov Ir HaKohanim. Because he was embarrassed. He had busha. They were. He killed them all. One of them escaped with them. But he was so embarrassed by the fact that he gave the instructions, even though he didn't kill, Doab did, but he gave the instructions to kill all the Kohanim, that he didn't even want to mention, he couldn't even say the words, couldn't even come out of his mouth about the Urim V'Tumim.
He did not assume responsibility for what was happening to him.
That's one possible interpretation.
So wait a minute.
It's possible. We're going to see the opposite.
When one person survived, he took the Urim V'Tumim with him, and that's right.
Yeah, David, he happened to have the Urim V'Tumim with him. He grabbed whatever he could. He grabbed the Urim V'Tumim, and they were by David. He was, since Shaul was out to kill David, and Shaul wiped out all the city of Nov, excluding this one person, David said, you might as well stay with me, because we're being chased after the same person. And that's what happened. But so some explain that that's what happened.
So you're saying that he couldn't see him, or he sent somebody into the Philistine camp where David was?
That's how some interpret the only way that he was able to act. It says that he went to the Urim V'Tumim, and we know that the Urim V'Tumim were by David, and David was over there in the Philistine camp. So some explain that he actually went. Not he, but a shliach went. He had sent a messenger. That's how some interpret
it. Doesn't get it.
What's that?
He doesn't get it.
Denial.
No, he is. I mean,
Shmuel,
but he was
alive.
Told him,
you're
finished.
Now, one interpretation based on the Rashi is that he just denied that he did anything wrong. Okay. But the Talmud, based on these words of the Rashi, focused that he did have a positive quality over here. That quality was busha. That he was embarrassed about it, right? So he was. He should be, but not necessarily would be. He should be. Now, the Talmud tells us an unbelievable statement with regard to this halacha. We learn out from this because we're going to end up seeing in the next few sentences, maybe next time, about because of his busha, his humiliation that he felt for the fact that Nov, Ir, Kohanim were wiped out, he will have all of his sins will be forgiven, and that tomorrow, the next day where he'll die tomorrow in war, that Misa will be Mechaper, that will be his full atonement, and he will be together on the same level in the world to come as Shmuel. That's what we're going to see. We're not going to get all to that.
Busha was a form of tshuva for him?
Yes. Yes. That's how Chazal interpret this. Let me just read a few lines because this is is very powerful. This idea of tshuva. The Gemara says as follows, based on this: Kol osed davar avera, you did a sin. Again, it's not in on our sheets, and I apologize for that. But this is what it says: a person does a sin, umisbayish bo, and you're embarrassed because of it. Mochen lo al kol avonosav. Then you are forgiven for every single one of your sins. Everything that you did wrong, if you had busha. And we learn out from here. This is the source. And the question that the Mefarshim ask is as follows. The language of the Talmud is Mochen lo al kol avonasa. Everything you did, you're forgiven. Now it's interesting, they point out that where was his level of busha? His humiliation was only for the city of Nov. Did Shaul ever do anything else wrong in his life? He did other things wrong. So, but it's interesting.
Especially the Molech, right?
So we know he did a lot of things wrong. But interestingly enough, we derive from here that if you are embarrassed for even one thing that you did wrong, even though you might have done many things wrong, the fact that you have busha for one act, that's enough, that mochen al kol avonasa, that everything that you did, even if you're not even remorseful or have busha of the other ones, since you have put within your heart some level of busha for one act, then mochen al kol avonasa. And he said, that's what he asks.
How does that manifest itself, this busha?
Well, again, in addition to that, the Mefarshim explained, his misa is what completed this atonement, his kapara. That was that if he would march into the battlefield and die as he was told he will die, which takes tremendous gall, knowing that you're going, I 100% am going to die because a prophet told me I will die tomorrow, you probably stay home that day.
He was fighting this all along. I guess at this point, there's no more fight.
But he could have.
There's no more fight. He has to surrender. He has to say, I guess you're right.
But
I guess it's going to happen the way you're talking.
But it takes, again, knowing his personality, for him to show any sign of remorse is a tremendous sign. So I just want to share with you for the next couple of moments this idea, which is a question that, again, is asked, and we don't have it in front of us, but I'm just going to read it to you. He's asking, that Shmuel is going to say, you will be with me within my mechitzot. You're going to be on the same level as me, Shaul. Because you had busha for Novir at Kohanim, for those Kohanim that died. What do you mean? He did so many other things wrong. And he says like this, the Tama said the reason for this is Shikivan Shemakir. Once you acknowledge Bechet Echad, that you did one thing wrong, that you realize that it was absolutely terrible, and you feel so bad that you did it, that you're humiliated and embarrassed, Hari Shiesho Shaychas El Hatshuva. Now you are a person that can at least begin the process of repenting. Vimis Barilo. If it's explained to you your mistake, and therefore thereafter, when you confess the other sins that you've committed, logically you'll probably also have busha as well. So a person who doesn't have any busha, how are they going to do tshuva? So if you're able to tap into this emotion for even one act, it'll become part of you for the other acts, other things that you've done wrong, and therefore you can possibly change completely. And he continues and says, it's an interesting principle. There's different principles of how to learn the Talmud, and one of them is, I'm not going to get into it too deeply, but it says that anything which is in a rule and is excluded from it, it's not just coming to talk about this matter, but everything else. And therefore, this is the idea. If you have an attitude that you are never remorseful for anything, but now all of a sudden you are for one thing, it's going to start carrying in and trickling into your other actions as well. It'll have an effect on all the things you do, and therefore you'll have complete improvement. That's what we say, what you're going to be saying numerous times before we klap al chet, before we say ashamnu b'gadnu, we say tevola fanecha tevilosenu yatis alamit chenosenu she'enonu azipanim ukshi oref lomu fanecha sadikim anachnu v'ochatanu aval anachnu v'avosenu chatanu. What's the significance of acknowledging that we have done something wrong and that we do not have the chutzpah, the arrogance of saying that we did nothing wrong? Shezek kol halimus chus. This will give us the merit to realize that I did something wrong, to acknowledge that you've made a mistake, and therefore that's the first step. And therefore, if you have busha for one thing, it'll carry on also for other things as well. And the Rabbeinu Yonah, which we'll conclude with says as follows. He says, Shapachad Hamisa, Shapachad Hamisa Mechaper Kamisa. Even right now, even though he didn't die yet, he's considered to be forgiven. Why? We said before, according to some opinions, that the only time Shaul will have complete atonement is when he dies at war. But it says, as we'll see next time, Imi Mechitzasi is not later, but he's talking to him now. Shmuel is talking to Shaul now. Right now you are forgiven, but he didn't die yet. The reality is, even though he did not die yet, but he knows that tomorrow he will die. And therefore we learn out from here, Shepachad Hamisa Mechaper Kamisa, a person who has the fear of the old of their dying day, that is in itself a kapara, just like death itself. And therefore, as soon as he begins, or anyone senses their morality, that they're mortal, mortality, then Kfar Nischaper Bekaparas Hamisa, then they're completely forgiven. But Nimso, we find Shemi Shahargo Harag Sadik V'chassid. And therefore we find, interestingly enough, the words of the Rebbeinu Yonah, that when Shaul dies, he will die not only as a Tzadik, but Tzadik V'chassid. He's going to be above and beyond. That's how great he's going to be viewed when he does pass away. So therefore, again, this is what he was told, that even though I did inquire the Urim V'Tumim, I'm so embarrassed about it that I didn't even want to mention it to you. And therefore, because of this, we find that if a person is a little humiliated and isn't so proud and justifies their actions, then in fact you're forgiven. As I always mention in conclusion, that when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never went there, that's what I was told, right? That the first thing you're supposed to say is, I'm an alcoholic. Because the first stage is acknowledging that you have a mistake. And once you acknowledge that you made a mistake, then you're on the road to improvement. And that's what Shaul did. He realizes by not mentioning his mistake, by showing his busha, that he was wrong. And therefore, because of this, he was mechaper, became a tzaddik v'chassid. We'll finish this parak next week.